Well, okay, so I'd like to start today's study for December 26th, 2022. This is video number two for today. The first video was, there's two points I want to correct, at least two. These are not the full list of errors, but there were two errors at least in that video earlier today. One of which was that an anion is the negative ion and the cation is the positive ion. So OH negative is an anion. I guess the reason I didn't want to acknowledge that an anion was negative is because the N in anion stands for negative, so you can remember it that way. But I wasn't willing to acknowledge that my late wife Anne, was associated with a negative charge, so I switched it around, I think, for that reason. That's the psychological reason or excuse for it, for my mistake. But cation is positive. There's no way to know that from the name cat, is there? Let me think. Cat. Yeah, the T in cat is a plus sign. And the N in anion is a negative, stands for negative because it's N, the first letter of the word negative, right? So that's how we can remember anion and cation. But OH negative is an anion, not a cation. So that's the correction of that one. The other thing I wanted to correct. Have I got this program running? It's just a minute. I don't have it visible here. Oh yeah, sure it is. Okay. The other thing I wanted to clear up, let's run terminal. So in terminal, I wrongly stated that, and now I'm going to have to resize, just make myself some room here. Clear this out of the way here. That's better. I wrongly made the statement that in the display placer program statement, where it defines the monitors after stating the name of the program display placer here, which I will enlarge here, hopefully. Then it, okay, it says this is the prompt. The percent sign is the end of the prompt. This is the actual terminal prompt. It ends with percent. So the display placer is the first word in the command. Percent is just like a full colon. It just means that's the beginning. What comes after is the beginning. So, okay, consider percent as a colon. Display spacer is the name of the program. Then the parameters come after. But I said that there was no way to determine which of the monitors was the main monitor using display placer. But think about it. How could a program use a set of instructions to single out one of the items over all the others? Well, I had forgotten by putting it first. By putting that monitor first on the list, it specifies that monitor, possibly anyway, as the main monitor. So the fact that it was first, since there's only one main monitor, putting it first would be sufficient as a way of distinguishing it as the main monitor. So that is possibly the definitive statement there. So it may not have been, what's the name of the program again? No, I'm not sure. Well, look, the program is not even running. Ikuna or Ikuna? It's Ikuna, possibly, might be the correct pronunciation, actually. Ikuna, I suspect, is probably the correct pronunciation because any European and East Asian and Middle Eastern language uses the letter I to create an E sound rather than an I sound. The short I, E, rather than the long I. So it's long I because I is the long I sound is created using an A and then an E, I. It's two sounds, whereas the short I is E. It only uses the one sound. But be that as it may, that's perhaps not very important how we pronounce it. But Ikuna is the program that I said might have been responsible for distinguishing which monitor was the main monitor. But I don't think that's true, because I don't think it has that ability. But I do think, because I don't think it needs that ability, all that Ikuna needs to do is to recall where the windows are placed of each application. So I'm going, once again, I'll close or quit Ikuna. But when we look at our preferences, as I showed you in the last video, displays, we see that the internal monitor of the MacBook Pro, here it's given, it's called an Apple Display, right here. It's got ProMotion as the refresh rate. Only the M1, I think it's only the M1 Max actually, and only the M1 Pro and M1 Max have the ProMotion display option for the refresh rate option, the ProMotion refresh rate, which is a variable refresh rate. But let's not go into that. But this is the Apple display, it's the internal display of the laptop, MacBook Pro M1 Max 16-inch laptop. But it's being used as an extended display because the main display, as I've already mentioned, is this one, which is the Alienware, which is an ultra-wide 3440 by 1440, 8W3423DWF, and F stands for FreeSync. There are two versions of this monitor. One is compatible with FreeSync and the other with the other standard in the gaming industry for synchronization, which it even slips my mind at the moment, but whatever that other one is, there's two of them, FreeSync and the other one. I bought the FreeSync version because it was much less money. I think that's why I saved a lot of money by doing that. So, and I don't do gaming, so I thought I might as well buy the less expensive model. But anyway, this is the main display, is the Alienware. And it could easily be that it was determined on boot up by the running of this display spacer program that was run by, let's see if we can run Automator. It probably remembers where it runs here. Automator, it remembers it was running on this screen because I ran it here last. And it doesn't remember to make itself taller, but that's okay. I'm doing that now. So this is the program that we call Automator, and this is the shell script that I had copied along with the full path. The full path of that program display placer was this path, slash being the home directory or the root directory, right? And then opt being a subdirectory of that and so on, all the way over to the location of the program. And then these are the monitor identifiers and refresh rates and resolutions spelled out for each monitor. But this is a script that I copied directly from the display placer list, and then a space, and then the word list. That command gave this result here of all the name of what command to use, with all of these parameters. And I just copied that, except I modified this hertz for the Alienware monitor to 100 so it could find the monitor, because 165 wasn't available. And it's not always available, the 165 hertz. So this is a safer choice, is to use 100. Anyway, every time I boot up, it runs this shell script, right? And if I press play, that's the noise it makes, like an African drum sound or something. Beautiful sound. But that sound just means, that's just the Automator sound. It just makes that sound. That sound, you could probably customize it to do something different if you wanted with the sounds. I'm not sure. Those are just system sounds. But it's just to indicate that the shell script completed down here and that the workflow was completed so that it ran successfully without error. So that means I can run this anytime in Automator. And that's the same thing that runs on boot up, because I made it into an app. So if I wanted to make that into an app, how would I do that? That's the question, right? I'd have to find out. Okay. We'd have to go. This is Automator. Okay? So it says library, and it gives all these things. Now, if we go open, let's see. Edit, format, automator. What if we say open? It knows that I have this app, you see? One of them was an app, and it's got the icon associated with an app. The other one is this script that I'm running now that's got the icon associated with the script. The app icon looks different. So if I click on that, see, it has the app icon, and that one I created as an app. But to make an app, I don't know, I can't see how to do that right here, right? But there's a way to create an app in Automator. I mean, I could restart Automator. There must be another way to do it. Convert, maybe? Let's see. Convert to an app. Yeah, I can convert to an app. There it is. So I convert, and then I say app. And then I say choose. Now it's converted to an app. See, and now I can't. Can I run the app? Maybe. Let's see. Yeah, I can still run the app. But now I can save it, and because it's in the application form now, it looks similar, but it's called application at the top. If I save it now, right, if I say save as, I can now go to wherever I want to save it, which is anywhere. This is just one directory that I've saved it in the past. I could save it in the file format, not workflow, but application. If I save it as an application, it would have to be a copy because it already exists as an app. It says right there. That's what it's telling me right there. It apparently already exists as an app. Why is it? Maybe not. But I gave it the name Display Spacer App before, so maybe. So this should be a unique name even without that. But I'm not going to save it here. I'm just saying you could save it. Well, I could just, if I'm going to save it, I'm going to save it somewhere like my desktop or something. Let's save it to my desktop, and then I can just delete it later. Okay. So we'll save it as Display Spacer, Display Placer, Automator Display Placer, example, EX, example, right, and then we'll just say save. And it's an application format to the desktop, we're saving it. Now we say save. Okay, now I see it on my desktop. You don't see it, but I see it. So it worked. Now if I try to run that, can I run it? No, maybe not. I'll open it. I opened it. Did it open? Was that what happened just there? Let me just see. I can't tell. Hang on. Oh yeah, here it is. So it's another copy of the Automator program. It opened it. And it doesn't have the tall height. So I know that it's... So let's close it again. So I'll open it again. Open. Oops, didn't work. Okay, let's close this. Let's try open again now. No. Oh, where's it opening it? It did not get an error, but I don't see it. Okay, so where's Automator? There it is. Okay. So it is open. Right. So when I tried to open that program, okay, I'm going to close Automator. I'll close the program. Okay, I could have done it here at the bottom. But anyway, I'm going to try to open it again. It's not open. Okay. Open. It's not opening. Okay. So that thing that I saved there, where is it? Doesn't appear anywhere that I can see. It's not there. But we can go back to Automator and open it again. Let's do that. Okay, and then we'll drag it over here so we can see it. Now, if we go to application, or let's close this, and we say open, Automator open. Well, maybe that's what happened. But here's the example. So it knows it's there. I can open it, and I can run it, and it works. Yeah. So it did successfully create the application, even though the behavior of opening it doesn't open the way I thought. So let's close Automator. And then I'm getting sidetracked, so I'm going to have to quit this. But if I try and double-click this, does it open Automator? I'm looking in the menu bars on all the monitors to see if it appears. It doesn't appear. So this does not open Automator. Interesting. It's an app, and it doesn't open Automator. All right, fine. I'm going to move it to the trash. That's fine. So we don't need that anymore. But it will still run as an application. We saw that. It tested out fine in Automator, so it'll run as an application. And we can put that in our startup location right here. Here. You know, in our login items. That dragging is very slow there. Something is slowing down the dragging here. We could go to our login under users and groups login. We could add this Automator just as I had added that same application here. But we could have added the one called example. It would still be called by the same name here. It's just called an application for Automator. It would run here just like this one runs. It would work because it worked when we tested it in the Automator program. So we know it works. And that is just this simple script. Oops, I just closed my preferences. Let's open them again. System preferences. And store them over here on the other monitor, where they normally are stored. We could, it just runs this script here. Display spacer script is all it does. And it controls the configuration of the monitors, as I said. So let's close this. And that's how probably my Dell monitors made the main monitor. And that's the correction. That was a long correction. But now we're ready to do our study. But first of all, I would say we have a marvelous presentation of Brother Sam Hurd and the Gilead class. And also, I mean, they had one talk given by one of their representatives, and we saw the Gilead class receive their diplomas or their assignments, I should say. They graduated, and we saw the graduation ceremony of the presentation. It was it's a talk on the video section of the library on JW.org, and it's called 152nd Gilead Graduation. Concluding talk and assignments, 32 minutes and 41 seconds. It's in the video section. I would be, I'm going to say, be wary of any introduction to a book of the Bible. I don't believe the chronology is correct, and therefore I don't believe much else about what is said about these books of the Bible, so I would avoid that particular video. But the other videos, the one about the Gilead graduation, I watched this one, and Brother Samuel Hurd is unbelievably effective in his talk. It's really impressive, and his health has apparently vastly improved since the last time. I wonder if it's possibly because of his beginning the application of the idea of using vitamins in a new way, perhaps, that has permitted that upsurge in his health. But for whatever reason, I'm very, very happy that he is experiencing an improvement in his health. And that I'm also happy for us, because we're benefiting immensely from his improvement in that way. He looks much more and sounds, he looks and sounds, more importantly, probably sounds more full of energy and full of life. So now, I need to expand this a little bit more. Now we're ready for our Psalms study. And just before we begin that, I just wanted to point out one of the scriptures pointed out by Brother Jackson in his address of the audience. He mentioned this scripture at Matthew, or it was given, and he mentioned it, but it was quoted as from Matthew 28:2-4 in the slide that was given. The quote was from this scripture, and the thing that Brother Jackson mentioned was that these Roman soldiers who were the watchmen here guarding the grave of Jesus, they must have witnessed these angels. They actually witnessed the presence of the angels who rolled away the stone in verse 2 here, because they became as dead men, it says here in Matthew 28:4. So we know the Romans saw the angels. The Romans saw the angels, not just the disciples. The actual Roman watchmen really saw these angels, and they were afraid. So it wasn't just disciples who are... Now, maybe the disciples are the only ones who report these things, but it's still recorded in the gospel that the watchmen observed and were afraid of the presence of these angels. So that I wanted to mention. Very interesting and very important to understand about the scriptures, right? It's not just, the gospels are not just statements of things seen by the disciples that no one else saw. That's not what it is. In some cases, even the authorities witnessed these things, as we know, because the Pharisees, of course, and the chief priests and the scribes, they also saw some of the miracles of Jesus, probably many of them, and yet that didn't cause them to believe or become Christian in many cases. Some of them, in fact, did. And also, some of them had to become secret disciples because they didn't want to be discovered and expelled from the synagogue. They had to be secretive disciples. They couldn't actually confess their faith openly, some of them, but some of them did become disciples, and we know this. We can talk about it later. Nicodemus, I believe, was one of them, mentioned in John. If we look at John chapter 3, right? Right. But let's look up Nicodemus. Okay. Let's see what we find. Right. Oh no, it was Joseph of Arimathea in John 19:38. He was a disciple of Jesus, but a secret one, out of his fear of the Jews. There's an example of a secret disciple. Yeah, that's one example. We're not going to go into the details. We're going to get on with our study now, I think. Little children, let's start. Our first consideration will be, for today, it's Psalm, I believe, 86, is that right? 86? Yes, I think so. And it's a long one? No, it's not too long. And let's look at the last chapter of Isaiah to determine how long that is. I think it's quite long. Yeah, it is. It's fairly long. Yeah, it's not too long. And it's an important one because it has some interesting ideas in it, teachings in it. But it's the last chapter of the book of Isaiah. And then we have Matthew 16. Appropriate for today, perhaps, because the Pharisees and Sadducees approached to tempt him in Matthew 16. And today is December 26th. which a person might associate with certain things in the world, right? The name that it conventionally, traditionally has in the calendar, for example, being one of those things. So let's look at Psalm 86, a prayer of David. Incline, O Jehovah, your ear. Answer me, for I am afflicted and poor. O do guard my soul, for I am loyal. Save your servant. You are my God that is trusting in you. Show me favor, O Jehovah, for to you I keep calling all day long. Make the soul of your servant rejoice, for to you, O Jehovah, I lift up my very soul. For you, O Jehovah, are good and ready to forgive, and the loving kindness to all those calling upon you is abundant. Do give ear, O Jehovah, to my prayer, and do pay attention to the voice of my entreaties. In the day of my distress, I will call upon you, for you will answer me. There is none like you among the gods, O Jehovah. Neither are there any works like yours. All the nations whom you have made will themselves come, and they will bow down before you, O Jehovah, and will give glory to your name. For you are great and are doing wondrous things. You are God, you alone. Instruct me, O Jehovah, about your way. I shall walk in your truth. Unify my heart to fear your name. I laud you, O Jehovah my God, with all my heart, and I will glorify your name to time indefinite. For your loving kindness is great toward me, and you have delivered my soul out of Sheol, its lowest place. O God, the presumptuous ones themselves have risen up against me, and the very assembly of tyrannical ones have looked for my soul, and they have not set you in front of themselves. But you, O Jehovah, are a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abundant in loving kindness and trueness. Turn to me and show me favor. Do give your strength to your servant, and do save the son of your slave girl. Work out with me a sign meaning goodness, that those hating me may see it and be ashamed. For you yourself, O Jehovah, have helped me and comforted me. And that's Psalm 86. I feel like that's very self-explanatory. And one famous verse is, unify my heart to fear your name, verse 11. O Jehovah, unify my heart to fear your name. We saw that because it was in, I believe it was in one of the presentations, in one of the conventions, or possibly something else. Whether it was a year text or, but I know that the scripture has featured prominently somewhere in Jehovah's organization recently. Yeah, I just remember it very clearly because of that. Now, maybe we'd like to single out one more thing from this psalm that we might want to wish to try to remember. I think the one that stood out to me the most, which is unusual, because it isn't usually the one that stands out to me, is something like this, which is fairly negative, but it's where it says here in verse 14 of Psalm 86, they have not set you in front of themselves. that's something we need to remember. It's useful to remember this, that the enemies of Jehovah, they don't even think of Jehovah. They don't set Jehovah. They do not set Jehovah in front of themselves. They don't spend any time thinking about Jehovah. That's what that says. We need to be aware of that if we're going to be, if we have to have dealings with these people. If we're compelled to actually communicate with and have dealings with people who are not believers, it's useful to be aware of this, that they aren't believers and they don't think about Jehovah. That's something that is significant and memorable to me. It's for this case, today, for our study, I think it feels right to learn that for in today's study. And now here's Isaiah 66, the last chapter of the book of Isaiah. This is what Jehovah has said. The heavens are my throne, and the earth is my footstool. Where then is the house that you people can build for me? And where then is the place as a resting place for me? Now, all these things my own hand has made, so that all these came to be, is the utterance of Jehovah. To this one then I shall look, to the one afflicted and contrite in spirit, and trembling at my word. The one slaughtering the bull is as one striking down a man. The one sacrificing the sheep is as one breaking the neck of a dog. The one offering up a gift, the blood of a pig. The one presenting a memorial of frankincense is as one saying a blessing with uncanny words. They are also the ones that have chosen their own ways, and in their disgusting things their very soul has taken a delight. I myself in turn shall choose ways of ill-treating them, and the things frightful to them I shall bring upon them, for the reason that I called, but there was no one answering. I spoke, but there were none that listened, and they kept on doing what was bad in my eyes, and the thing in which I took no delight they chose. Hear the word of Jehovah, you men who are trembling at his word, your brothers that are hating you, that are excluding you by reason of my name, said, may Jehovah be glorified. He must also appear with rejoicing on your part, and they are the ones that will be put to shame. There is a sound of uproar out of the city, a sound out of the temple. It is the sound of Jehovah repaying what is deserved to his enemies. Before she began to come into labor pains, she gave birth. Before birth pangs could come to her, she even gave deliverance to a male child. Who has heard of a thing like this? Who has seen things like these? Will a land be brought forth with labor pains in one day? Or will a nation be born at one time? For Zion has come into labor pains as well as given birth to her sons. As for me, shall I cause the breaking through and not cause the giving birth, says Jehovah? Or am I causing a giving birth, and do I actually cause a shutting up, your God has said? Rejoice with Jerusalem and be joyful with her, all you lovers of her. Exult greatly with her, all you keeping yourselves in mourning over her, for the reason that you will suck and certainly get satisfaction from the breast of full consolation by her, for the reason that you will sip and experience exquisite delight from the teat of her glory. For this is what Jehovah has said. Here I am extending to her peace just like a river, and the glory of nations just like a flooding torrent. And you will certainly suck. Upon the flank you will be carried, and upon the knees you will be fondled. Like a man whom his own mother keeps comforting, so I myself shall keep comforting you people. And in the case of Jerusalem, you will be comforted. And you will certainly see, and your heart will be bound to exult, and your very bones will sprout just like tender grass. And the hand of Jehovah will certainly be made known to his servants, but he will actually denounce his enemies. For here Jehovah himself comes as a very fire, and his chariots are like a storm wind, in order to pay back his anger with sheer rage and his rebuke with flames of fire. For as fire, Jehovah himself will for a fact take up the controversy, yes, with his sword, against all flesh, and the slain of Jehovah will certainly become many. Those sanctifying themselves and cleansing themselves for the gardens behind one in the center, eating the flesh of the pig, and the loathsome thing, even the jumping rodent, they will altogether reach their end, is the utterance of Jehovah. And as regards their works and their thoughts, I am coming in order to collect all the nations and tongues together, and they will have to come and see my glory. And I will set among them a sign, and I will send some of those who are escaped to the nations, to Tarshish, Pool, and Lud, those drawing the bow, Tubal and Javan, the faraway islands who have not heard a report about me or seen my glory. And they will for certain tell about my glory among the nations. And they will actually bring all your brothers out of all the nations as a gift to Jehovah, on horses and in chariots and in covered wagons and on mules and on swift she-camels, up to my holy mountain, Jerusalem, Jehovah has said. Just as when the sons of Israel bring the gift in a clean vessel into the house of Jehovah. And from them also I shall take some for the priests, for the Levites, Jehovah has said. For just as the new heavens and the new earth that I am making are standing before me, is the utterance of Jehovah, so the offspring of you people and the name of you people will keep standing. And it will certainly occur that from new moon to new moon, and from Sabbath to Sabbath, all flesh will come in to bow down before me, Jehovah has said. And they will actually go forth and look upon the carcasses of the men that were transgressing against me, for the very worms upon them will not die, and their fire itself will not be extinguished, and they must become something repulsive to all flesh. That was the book of Isaiah, and that was the last chapter of Isaiah, chapter 66. I think the final verse of that chapter is perhaps the one that I remember the most vividly of all, where it talks about the fire would not be extinguished upon the carcasses of those men, those ones who transgressed against Jehovah, and that the worms upon them would not die. They would become repulsive to all flesh. But there's this miraculous thing in verse 7 that is mentioned here, that a birth could occur before a woman even comes into childbirth pains, into labor pains. She could give birth unexpectedly. And this is what is mentioned, and about which it is said in verse 8, who has heard of a thing like this? You know, will a land be brought forth in one day? I mean, that was verse 8, you know, that how could this happen so suddenly that Jehovah could cause something new to spring up like a nation out of nothing in one day? And in verse 1, the heavens are his throne. How can we build a house for Jehovah on earth? The earth is his footstool. How could he live in a house on earth and dwell in a house, a temple that people build? Really, it seems absurd that Jehovah would reside in any place on earth. However, be that as it may, of course, really, Jehovah is interested in those on earth who are humble and afflicted and suffering, those who are sick, afflicted, but who are still humble, even despite their afflictions. They're still looking for Jehovah and asking for the Holy Spirit, you know, trying to find Jehovah and looking for his blessing, even though they're afflicted and suffering. They're contrite in spirit, and they're trembling at Jehovah's word. They look to his word. That's what Jehovah wants to see. That's where he resides. That's where he looks. It's not in some structure on earth that is going to, you know, serve as his dwelling place on earth. That's not where Jehovah's really going to focus his attention, not on some grandiose building structure that men make. It's going to be to the one afflicted that Jehovah's going to look. And that's, you know, importantly, the kind of person that Jehovah is. He loves humility. In verse 5, he's speaking to the ones who are trembling at his word. And he's promising that these people, there are those, in fact, it says here. Yet Jehovah's saying that there are those who are excluding us because of Jehovah's name. They're saying, well, they aren't with us. We are Jehovah's people. They're not with us. There are some of us who are perhaps excluded because of Jehovah's name. Because somebody would say, well, they don't belong with us. There might be even an organization that says, we are Jehovah's organization. They're not with us. We are the people of Jehovah. And they exclude other people because they believe they're Jehovah's people. But look what Jehovah says here about that. He promises that actually, that's not the way it really is. Even though these people are calling on Jehovah and saying, may Jehovah be glorified, because they're excluding these other people, Jehovah must appear with rejoicing on the part of those other people, and those who are declaring this statement about glorifying Jehovah, they are the ones that will be put to shame in verse 5. That's an astounding statement there. That completely reverses all the injustice caused by ignoring certain people who don't deserve to be ignored, simply because a person has a holier-than-thou attitude or a self-righteous attitude, that because they worship Jehovah or because they declare Jehovah's name and say, may Jehovah be glorified, because they say something positive about Jehovah's name and its glorification, they believe they can exclude other people who are not saying that. But that's not what Jehovah says. Jehovah says you cannot exclude those people, because Jehovah will appear with rejoicing on your behalf, even if you're excluded. It's just an incredible. That's the most powerful part of this chapter in my mind today. It's just right there, verse 5. He's going to be there for you. Do not worry. Okay? Do not worry at all. He'll be there for you. Matthew 16. Here the Pharisees and Sadducees approached Jesus, and to tempt him, they asked him to display to them a sign from heaven. In reply, well, let's look at, first of all, verse 15 to see what the context was. He got into the boat and came into the regions of Magadan. You may recall that from yesterday's study. In reply, he said to these tempters, when they asked him to display to them a sign from heaven, in reply, he said to them, when evening falls, you are accustomed to say, it will be fair weather, for the sky is fire red. And at morning, it will be wintry, rainy weather today, for the sky is fire red, but gloomy looking. You know how that saying, red sky at night, sailor's delight. Red sky in the morning, sailors take warning. That's the traditional English saying. When evening falls, you are accustomed to say, it will be fair weather, for the sky is fire red. Red sky at night, sailor's delight. At morning, it will be wintry, rainy weather today, for the sky is fire red, but gloomy looking. Red sky in the morning, sailors take warning. You know how to interpret the appearance of the sky, Jesus said. But the signs of the times, you cannot interpret. So you know the saying about the red sky at night and red sky in the morning, but the signs of the times you cannot interpret. And this is all in square brackets here. And that if we look at the asterisk, we need to find that. Hang on a second here. There it is. According to certain manuscripts, a number of them, including the Latin Vulgate and some of the Syriac versions and the Sinaitic manuscript and Vatican manuscript 1209, it's not visible. You're not seeing it. I'm sorry. I'm going to make this smaller here. I'm just going to fix this if I can here. I'll just shift this up that way. There we go. Now, I believe you might see it. So down here, it says certain manuscripts omit those words in the double brackets. So one of those manuscripts is the Vulgate, which is VG. B is Vatican, that B, the letter B there, stands for Vatican Manuscript 1209. The Hebrew Aleph symbol there stands for the Sinaitic manuscript. SY stands for the Syriac, okay? The VG was the Vulgate. SY is the Syriac version, and there's two different versions quoted there, C and S version of the Syriac. There's the Syriac Peshitta version, too. I'm not sure if they are one of these, or if it is one of these. The Armenian version there, ARM, too. All of those versions, including some more other ones here. Maybe IT, it sounds like Italian. I forget what IT stands for, though. IT, all of those things, CD and W and IT and VG and these other ones, they all omit the words in double brackets. Okay. And then, according to those manuscripts, Jesus just said, a wicked and adulterous generation keeps on seeking for a sign, but no sign will be given it except the sign of Jonah. That's according to some manuscripts, and other manuscripts include the words about the red sky at night and red sky in the morning. And then he said, you know how to interpret the appearance of the sky, but the signs of the times you cannot interpret. And then we have the consensus that all agree upon. A wicked and adulterous generation keeps on seeking for a sign, but but no sign will be given it, except the sign of Jonah. And that was that Jonah would be in the belly of the fish, right? He was in the belly of a fish for 3 days. It didn't say he was in the belly of a whale. A whale is not a fish. He was in the belly of a fish for 3 days. So it was a large fish, but it was not a whale, which is a mammal. With that, he went away, leaving them behind. But the idea was the 3 days. The sign of Jonah was the 3 days. And that 3 days was achieved in a way explained in the article Born and Raised, which I presented as my most recent article regarding the chronology of the world, and in this case, regarding the Messiah. Now, the disciples crossed to the other side, because Jesus, with that, he went away, leaving them behind. Now, the disciples crossed to the other side and forgot to take loaves along. Jesus said to them, "Keep your eyes open and watch out for the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees." But because, you see, because they'd forgotten to take loaves, it says, "So they began to reason among themselves, saying, 'We did not take any loaves along.'" So that he reminded them, inadvertently, he was reminding them. They didn't have to think this. It just reminded them about the fact they'd forgotten to take some bread. Knowing this, Jesus said, "Why are you doing this reasoning among yourselves? Because you have no loaves, you with little faith. Do you not yet see the point, or do you not remember the 5 loaves in the case of the 5,000 and how many baskets you took up, or the 7 loaves in the case of the 4,000 and how many provision baskets you took up? How is it you do not discern that I did not talk to you about loaves? But watch out for the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees." Then they grasped that he said to watch out not for the leaven of the loaves, but for the teaching of the Pharisees and Sadducees. That's what he'd said. He had said, "Watch out, keep your eyes open," in verse 6, "and watch out for the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees." He didn't talk about bread at all. He wasn't talking about bread. He's talking about the teaching of the Pharisees and Sadducees. So, in verse 13, "Now, when he had come into the parts of Caesarea Philippi, Jesus went asking his disciples, 'Who are men saying the Son of Man is?' They said, 'Some say John the Baptist, others Elijah, still others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets.' He said to them, 'You, though, who do you say I am?' In answer, Simon Peter said, 'You are the Christ, the Son of the living God.' In response, Jesus said to him, 'Happy you are, Simon, son of Jonah, because flesh and blood did not reveal it to you, but my Father who is in the heavens did. Also I say to you, you are Peter, and on this rock mass I will build my congregation.'" You see, the name Peter means rock. That's why he said that. "And on this rock mass I will build my congregation, and the gates of Hades will not overpower it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of the heavens, and whatever you may bind on earth will be the thing bound in the heavens, and whatever you may loose on earth will be the thing loosed in the heavens." Then he sternly charged the disciples not to say to anybody that he was the Christ. From that time forward, Jesus Christ commenced showing his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the older men and chief priests and scribes and be killed and on the third day be raised up. At this Peter took him aside and commenced rebuking him, saying, Be kind to yourself, Lord. You will not have this destiny at all. But turning his back, he said to Peter, Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me because you think not God's thoughts, but those of men. Then Jesus said to his disciples, If anyone wants to come after me, let him disown himself and pick up his torture stake or life, and continually follow me. If we look at that, the footnote, let him pick up his torture stake. It says there, or life. The footnote, or life. His torture stake, or pick up his life. Okay. And continually follow me, for whoever wants to save his soul. Well, that's the footnote for. No, it's Appendix 5C. Okay, that's not pick up his torture stick. I'm sorry. Torture stick, see Appendix 5C. It's this one, which says torture stake. It's storos, right? It's not the cross. It's not a cross. It's a torture stake. It's not a cross. It's an upright pail. It's not a cross. That's important. So where it says, let him pick up his torture stake, it doesn't say pick up his cross. It says torture stake because a cross was too expensive. For the Romans to build a cross, every time they wanted to impale somebody, they just used a much less expensive, in the vast majority of cases, including Jesus, they would have used this upright pail, and they just put Jesus' arms together above him, his legs together below him, and he was impaled by being nailed onto this upright stake. That's what it was. So picking up the cross. So the symbol of a cross is not a Christian symbol anyway. There was no cross, but continually follow me, Jesus said, for whoever wants to save his soul or his life will lose it. But whoever loses his soul for my sake will find it. For what benefit will it be to a man if he gains the whole world but forfeits his soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man is destined to come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and then he will recompense each one according to his behavior. Truly I say to you that there are some of those standing here that will not taste death at all until first they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. So, were there some of the apostles who survived until Jesus came in 70 CE and ensured that Roman soldiers destroyed Jerusalem and the temple was destroyed permanently? Yes, there were, because John the disciple, for one, lived until the 90s, which is more than 20 years after the destruction of the temple, and so there were others, undoubtedly, who lived that long. John probably was in his, at the time of impalement, let's say John was a young man, perhaps, in 30 of the Common Era, the year 30 CE, which was the crucifixion. That, if John had been 20 years old at that time, add 60 to that to get to 90, or we believe John lived until the year 98, perhaps, or something of that order. That's 68 years added to 20. That's 88 years old. If John had been 30, he'd be 98 years old. If he was born in in exactly the turn of the Common Era. He'd be 98 years old if he lived until the year 98 CE. So John was perhaps close to 100 years old at the time when he died, or, you know, he lived that long. So there probably were other disciples or people who also lived beyond the time when Jesus came to execute judgment as a spirit force empower the Roman armies to destroy Jerusalem or to destroy the temple at Jerusalem, which really destroyed the Jews as a religious group. It destroyed their worship, and they have never got it back ever since. So that was significant, but that was the Son of Man coming in his kingdom, right? But that must be talking about the 70 CE destruction. It can't be talking about 1914 of our Common Era when World War I began, because there aren't any people who are still who lived that long, are there? We don't know of any people who are still alive since the time of Jesus who lived 1900 years. Do we? I don't know of any. I can speak for myself. I was born in 1957, so I did not live since the time of Jesus. But as far as we know, nobody's lived that long. So if it's talking about the kingdom in 1914, that would imply that some people would have had to have survived that long. So that's not really what it's talking about. Unless we're willing to believe that Jesus said something that was untrue. But instead, it's not necessary to think that. We can think of it as Jesus referring to the destruction of the temple at Jerusalem. Because, of course, Jesus rules potentially then, and also, I mean, then he did have power ever since his crucifixion. He had power ever since his ascension to heaven. When he gained the official power, he had power over the kingdom. And they would see him coming in his kingdom when Jerusalem's temple was destroyed, implying that the Christian religion had replaced the Jewish religion. Jesus had come in his kingdom. So that's what that means. So this is Matthew 16, and that's all for Matthew 16. And I think the most interesting part of that, or the thing that stood out today for me in that, was there was something, I believe. Where was it? Well, perhaps the torture stake. The part about the torture stake implies there's no cross in Christendom, in Christianity. Christendom has it, but that's false Christianity. There's no cross in true Christianity. It's not a cross. And that's proven by the fact that the word storos means stake, the Greek word. That Greek word, torture stake, storos, crux. In Latin, it was translated crux, which means cross, but it's not really originally in Latin. It was originally not in Latin. It was written in Greek, and storos is the word. And there's no evidence that the Greek word storos meant a cross. There's no evidence of that. So there's no evidence that the Greek word storos here meant a cross. Such as the pagans used as a religious symbol for many centuries before Christ. See, the cross was used as a pagan symbol long before Christ ever came down to earth to render sacrifice for mankind. So the cross is an inappropriate symbol for Christianity because it's a pagan symbol. So that's what we're going to take from this study, I think, today in that particular chapter. So each chapter I'm happy if I can learn one thing for the day from that chapter. In this case, we're learning not just about the cross being inappropriate for the fact that it's not really a cross upon which Jesus was impaled, but it was a stake, but also the fact that the pagans used the cross prior to Jesus' time, and they used it as a pagan symbol, not as a symbol of true worship at all. And they practiced horrific things in their own religious practices, such as sacrificing their own children, murdering their children in offering to the gods of their own choosing, of the false gods of their own choosing, and things that were equally disgusting and horrifying and tragic in the way that they worshiped false gods. So we don't use a symbol like that, such as a pagan symbol, or any symbol for that matter, in Christianity. But certainly pagan symbols would be even more detestable to Jehovah. So that's it for today's study, I believe. How long have I talked? Well, it's long enough, certainly. I'm really still thrilled about Ikuna. I don't know if Ikuna has solved my problem, or if Display Placer has solved my problem. I know that it didn't solve my problem initially to install Display Placer. I still had problems with the Windows. When I tried to run Ikuna with the Safari browser and all of its tabs, it was a complete failure for Safari. And at that point, all my windows were still on the wrong monitor screens. It was all wrong. So it didn't retain my window positions. But this Ikuna, I think is it's yet to be seen how great it is for everybody in their own particular uses of it. I don't know how great it will be for them. But, I mean, most people probably who only have one monitor, because that's enough, right? One monitor is enough until you start to use, like I did, two monitors, and then you add a third monitor, because with my IMAX from 2011, they could support two outside or external monitors, you know, apart from the main monitor. The 2011 iMac could support two external monitors of the same resolution as the internal monitor. So the integrated monitor of the iMac. So it could support three identical monitors, 2560 by 1440 is what they were, which is a lot of screen space. And when you try that for the first time and you say, that's the screen space that I can get as my desktop, you know, and I'm not mirroring the displays. I'm using them. A mirror would be each display shows the same thing. I'm not mirroring them. I don't mirror my displays. I have them as one extended desktop. So I can drag the mouse all the way across from one side of one monitor through the central monitor and all the way across to the other side of the other monitor. You know, let's see, go down at the bottom. Drag it across through the central monitor and all the way to the right-hand side of the right-hand monitor. If there were three monitors across here, I could drag my mouse across all of the monitors and have different applications running on each monitor. You know, in my existing preferences, I can say displays. I can have here, I do have, in fact, the Philips monitor. I can have applications running on there. Then I can have applications running up here, applications, and they're all different applications, potentially, or different Safari windows. They could be running on the different monitor screens. Once you've experienced running different programs with a bigger desktop space, an extended desktop, you never want to go back to a single display again. So that's why this is important, and that's why it can help people. Because if you can afford to buy one external monitor, you can hopefully keep that monitor and use it again and again with your future computers. As you get a new computer, you can add, maybe later you can add one more monitor. You can have two external monitors. And as long as you make sure that your new computer can support as many external monitors as you have, and at the resolutions at which they're capable of displaying information. As long as you ensure that by doing a thorough investigation, ensure that all of these requirements of driving those additional monitors are met by your new computer. Then you can keep adding monitors to your setup. So in my case, I bought very inexpensive, the least expensive monitors I could buy. I think the Philips 4K monitors, that's a huge monitor, 4K. Look how big it is relative to the others. It's got a lot of real estate because it's 4K. But it's a 32-inch monitor. It's the same exact size, actually, as this one. This AOC monitor, the Q32G1WG4, is the same exact 32-inch size that this Philips monitor, the 328E1, is. They're the same exact physical size. They're 32 inches. But because the Philips has 4K resolution, and this one only has 2.5K, they appear smaller here because this one has more pixels. There's more physical real estate there to put windows. I can put more windows on there, or bigger windows with more information, more text, more everything. So once you've experienced more screen real estate, you just don't want to go back, because you can put more information up there. You can do your research more efficiently because you're not always switching windows and fumbling around with the keyboard or the mouse to try to open the appropriate window or bring it to the front. That's the reason why this is why Ikuna is a beneficial application for people to store their windows. And I don't see any reason why I should even mention the paid apps. Why would you want to pay for an application right now, even if it's only $4? Why would you pay for an application that in the future might fail? It might completely fail in the future to supply your needs. It might stop being supported or whatever. Right? And so, it makes no sense to me why a person would ever want to pay for an application that, even if it works and the person who wrote the application is still working on it, Apple could come out with a new OS tomorrow that wouldn't allow that application to run anymore. And Apple does that very frequently. They come out with new Mac OS's, new operating systems, that is, new versions of their operating system, which change everything as far as security goes because of some increased security or some other reason. The old apps don't run anymore, and maybe the same person is wanting to get it to run but can't because Apple doesn't permit it. Because Apple might be perhaps withholding some crucial piece of information that could enable it to be run. There are reasons why these things fail. So there's no reason to pay money for an application, in my opinion, when you can get a free one, Ikuna. And it's phenomenally powerful, I believe, even though I barely used it. It's already completely satisfied me. And I want to mention one thing I left out, too. I forgot to mention I promised I would explain it, and I forgot to explain it in the previous video. This I'll explain right now. The problems I had with Ikuna. A couple of times when I tried to run Ikuna, the windows popped up on the wrong screen, okay? But only for some of the app. Only for one or two apps did this happen. And it only happened for that app. It didn't happen every time. So the next time I tried to run Ikuna after rebooting, for example, I did not have to resave anything under a new workspace in Ikuna, which I could have done also. I could have started over and recreated a new workspace in Ikuna and given it a new name. I could have done that. But I didn't do that because I didn't need to. It whatever the problem was, it did fix itself. Whether it was because I closed the app and restarted it, I forget. I don't think I did that. Whether I ran Ikuna again, in other words, just clicked on the space. So let's get Ikuna running. You can run Ikuna either from your application folder, or you can drag it over here somewhere in your dock and keep it in your dock. Once it's run the first time, When you run programs for the first time in macOS, they appear to the right of the dock here, on the right end of the dock, before the dividing line, which is this vertical. That vertical line there, there's a vertical line that's barely visible at the bottom there. That vertical line divides the dock programs that are running with the other, or the regularly run programs with the other information. That's my WoodPro program. And this is, these are my downloads and applications folder. But that vertical line divides and separates. So when a program's run for the first time, it appears right to the left of that vertical line, right to the right of all these other programs. If you want it to stay in the dock when you close it, you drag it over here somewhere else and drop it down somewhere. Like I could drag this here. I have to pull it down so it separates and provides a place. Then I can let it go. If I just drag it, right, if I just click on it, if I just drag it, it's not going to leave it. It'll leave it in the same place unless I drag it and pull it down. Then it opens up a space for it and I can drop it. That's, and then you leave it there. Then when I close Ikuna, like right now, it stays in the dock even though it doesn't have a little glimmer below it. When I restart it, it gets the glimmer below it, and now it's running somewhere. Okay, it's running up here on my Philips. So I drag it down here if I want to run it here. Now I can click on this and it will run Ikuna. Anytime I want, I can re-click on this. Or I could say clean the desktop. So maybe that's what I did. Clean the desktop and then run it again if it fails. But you don't need to recreate a new Ikuna. If you want to recreate a new one after you clean the desktop or after you close all your apps and then or move them around or whatever you want to do, put them in the place they should be again, and if you want to create a new space, you just click on plus and it will create the new space. And then you give it a new name and you're all set. So that's how you run Ikuna. Well, you don't have to run, you don't have to create a new space, I mean, just because you have a problem one time. You might just be able to I think I just quit Ikuna. Just quit Ikuna, right? Like I just did now. It took two clicks sometimes. It takes two clicks for some reason. Then you start Ikuna again. And then, well, then I still have to drag it down here. And then you can I'm just dragging it down here so I can show you. I could just run it up on the Philips monitor by clicking on it, right? But I don't want to clean my desktop because I don't want everything to disappear. And I don't want to, I don't want to do anything with Ikuna right now. I'm just showing you, there it is. And if you want to create a new space, you can, but you're limited to four maximum. So once you've used up your four, I guess maybe the older ones disappear after you keep creating new spaces, or I've never gone that far. I'm not going to create new ones right now, but I've never used it except for one day now, it seems. But that's it. I've been totally satisfied with Ikuna because it's generally it has not posed any kind of problem persistently at all. It's just, in fact, it's been more or less almost, it's been flawless, but I want to say flawless, but I know it's not. But I've got four external monitors. My setup is complex, and I don't understand what the complexity was, what the particular configuration was that caused that problem. But occasionally Ikuna might produce the wrong result, and you might want to try maybe exiting Ikuna and quitting it, that is, and restarting it, or maybe even reboot your computer before you try and change anything in Ikuna and see if when you reboot everything is normal. What I find is when I reboot, even though Ikuna is not run automatically, because I have, when I shut down, all my windows are in the proper place. I don't close them. I don't close my applications except for Safari. I'm going to be closing that one, I believe, but I may not even have to do that. But all my applications that Ikuna stores, they don't include Safari. So, right, I've named my Ikuna workspace, I named it just not Safari because it doesn't include Safari. So every time I close down my operating system, I shut down Safari perhaps, but I don't shut anything else down. And then when I reboot, I'm not sure if it's Ikuna that does it, but somehow my system is able to display everything correctly. If it didn't, I could probably just say clean and then run Ikuna's workspace called Just Not Safari, and it would probably restore everything. If not, I could shut down all my applications. There's a way to do that. How do you shut down all applications? I'm not sure. Okay, let's get that. How to close all apps in Mac OS. I know there's a way to do that. Right. Option, Command, W. I don't want to do that because that'll close my OBS Studio. It's Open Broadcast Software Studio, version 28.0.2, which is the recording software I'm using right now to record this video. It would close that one as well. I don't want to do that. So, but if you go Option, which is the Alt key on a Windows keyboard, Alt Command or Alt Windows key, W, or so Command Alt, Command Option, or Windows key Alt W, Command Option W, or Windows key Alt W. That's the key combination. Command Alt W. Just like Command W will close one window of one app, you go Alt Command W or Option Command W, and that closes all the apps on your screen. Then once you've done that, you can reopen Ikuna and try again, open that workspace again and see what happens. That's what I would do if it fails. And then try rebooting and doing that again. And then in other words, close all your apps again and then reboot with no apps running. Then try to run Ikuna and see if that works. That's my approach, possibly, but I might try other things first. I don't know. But that would be one thing you'd want to try before you did anything like create a new workspace. Although you could, but it would just be, to my mind, it's not the logical order in which to do things. But that's the way you could do it. You could do anything that the program permits you to do, of course. Still, I would want to know what's causing it. That's why I would proceed in the way I just described first. And then rebooting will fix a lot of issues. But usually Mac OS doesn't need to reboot. It doesn't need to reboot. That's the difference. Used to be the big difference between Mac OS and Windows was that, and I think it probably still is, that you don't reboot Mac OS very often by necessity. You're not required to because it's a Linux-based system. It's just Linux is so solid that reboots are not generally required. So I think we've talked long enough now. It's Ward Green. Yeah, I'm up to my limit and beyond. Happy to talk to you, though. Very happy. And I love you very much. And I was very, very thrilled to hear you, Sam. And I loved seeing that your health appears to have vastly improved. I'm very, very encouraged and strengthened by that. And I'm going to continue to pursue my own health endeavors and share those with the friends and all the brothers and sisters, everybody, in fact, who is following what I'm doing. Because I think it's very important that vitamin K2 has an immense role to play in all of health, along with, of course, the main mineral in the body, calcium, and the second main mineral, magnesium, which also require vitamin D, as does vitamin K2 also. So those four, vitamin K2, vitamin D, calcium, and magnesium, are the foundation of, I believe, all human health and possibly all animal health too. But all human health is all that I'm studying right now. But we will get to animal health perhaps at some point. But I don't believe in keeping animals in captivity, personally. And that's why I don't have a dog. So, I mean, to me, it doesn't mean I don't like animals. If I don't have a cat or dog or a pet, it doesn't mean I don't like animals. It just means maybe I like them more. I want them to be either in the wild or at least not captive, perhaps, and that's why. But I think that human health is right now my focus, because I myself will die if I don't study it. I'm not doing it as a guinea pig. I'm not serving as a guinea pig. I'm serving as a person who is trying to not die, first of all, so that then I might be able to help others if I learn something. If I can be successful in my own health, but I'm going to die if I don't do it, so I'm not a guinea pig. So I don't want people to think that. I'm not interested in experimenting. Vitamin K2 is the safest substance known to man. I mean, that's a statement of absolute truth as far as I can tell. It's absolutely the most true statement I can make about vitamin K2. It's the safest substance known to man because it actually gives your life back to you. It gives health to your whole body through its work with the calcium mineral. So anyway, I'm going to terminate. December 26th, 2022, 1948 hours. Can you believe that? The year that Israel became a modern nation. May 14th, 1948. Anyway, this is 2022, December 26th. Ward Green saying, thank you for listening. God bless you. Seek first the kingdom. I do love you. Bye for now.